friends of futureprimitive.org.
I'm here this morning with my friend and partner, John Lash, and we are going to talk about the organic light. So let's jump right into it. And John, I would love you to describe your first experience with the organic light.
Well, that is something that happened to me when I was about 20 years old. And I would like to dedicate this interview to recounting that experience, which is one of the really beautiful mystical experiences of my life. First, though, I just want to say how it came about that I decided to tell about this. You know, I've been speaking quite a bit about the organic light, certainly writing about it a lot. We did a couple of interviews, one of which I wasn't totally happy with, so I had to remove it. And a while back, I guess it was in June, I was reflecting, and it occurred to me that I was somehow uncomfortable in speaking about the organic light. So I asked myself why. I went through a battery of different questions.
Yes.
And I thought, well, you know, I've been very explicit about my experience. I've said that I've had these experiences both with and without the help of psychoactive plants.
Exactly.
And for those people who wanted to know about my experience without, which would say spontaneous mysticism,
exactly,
I described that at length in Honeycomb Light of the Christos, which is on MetaHistory.org. So I'm sitting there with the cat on the terrace, scratching myself and saying, why do I feel uncomfortable? And then it occurred to me that I wrote explicitly about those two experiences of seeing the organic light, but I did not actually describe the first time I ever saw it.
Okay.
And I thought, wow, this is something to talk about, because there's nothing to explain, there's nothing to interpret. I'll tell you the story of how it happened. And in the interim of several weeks since this came up, I've suggested to you that we have this talk. And more things have come to light to me about why this story may be irrelevant. And so maybe at the end of the story, I could comment on that.
I just want to interrupt you one moment to say to our listeners that on your request, I did remove the talk number 3 of Rapture and Revolution, which was about that. So
this the organic light, but it wasn't. I listened to it a few times, and I thought that it was a bit digressive.
Okay.
And this is a subject that really needs to be talked about in naked honesty and in great simplicity. Which
beautiful.
Yeah.
So let's move into it.
Well, when I was around 20 years old, I was traveling in Thailand and Southeast Asia with a friend named Lair, who still lives there now.
Yes.
Lair and I were in Bangkok, hanging around, and we decided to go to Cambodia to visit Angkor Wat. So we hitchhiked out of Bangkok. I don't remember how we got out of the city. It's an enormous place. Hitchhiked toward the Thai-Cambodian border at a certain point. And then not far on the other side of the Cambodian border is a little town called Siem Reap, a little French colonial town, very shabby at the time. We were there in October. It was beautiful weather, calm, light, clear light, but absolutely nobody around, not a tourist in sight. So we were at the hotel in Siem Reap. We checked in.
Yes.
And the first day, we walked across the large moat to Angkor Wat, which is, of course, a famous site that many people would recognize.
Yes, yes.
By those black towers. And we spent the day wandering around. We were the only people there except a few kids tending these water buffaloes. It seems like all of Cambodia had been left to us at this moment for some reason.
Yes.
And so we saw Angkor Wat, and we saw the bas reliefs and so forth and so on. We're not particularly impressed somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So we came back to our hotel room that night. And the next day, I inquired at the lobby about renting a couple of bicycles, which I think cost 20 cents apiece. We rented these old rickety bicycles, and we set out into the marsh, which is Cambodia's just a really huge marsh. And there are hundreds of temples buried out there in these banyan trees and in these marsh-like areas, some of which have been raised by artificial plateaus. So So we headed out in that direction on our bicycles, clicking and clattering along. And our intention was specific, to go to another site called Angkor Thom.
Uh-huh.
Angkor Thom is a complex just as big as Angkor Wat. It's surrounded by a huge moat. And when you arrive there and you cross the moat, it's extremely impressive, because on either side of the moat, there are these long Naga serpents, and there are people holding these serpents. And so you go across the serpent bridge and you enter into this enchanted place called Angkor Thom.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what Angkor Thom is technically called. This is Khmer architecture of the 10th century, 11th, 12th centuries. I don't know what it's technically called, but I think it's called the Temple of the Bodhisattvas. Because Angkor Thom has these towers, and they're very high. You look up at them, about 20 feet high. And they have four faces, and each of those four faces is about 6 feet wide and 8 to 10 feet high.
Yes.
And on each of those four faces of all of the towers of Angkor Thom is the smiling face of a bodhisattva. The typical Asian Thai bodhisattva, but really more Cambodian, with those kind of almost curling, thick lips.
Yes.
Every bodhisattva has a different smile.
Uh-huh.
Every bodhisattva has a different look in its eyes. And I think there are 116 of them.
Wow.
So at that time, there was nobody at Angkor Thom, nobody but us, not even the chickens. But they had cleared a lot of it. They had cleared, there were still rooms that were overgrown with banyan trees. But it had basically been cleared, so you could wander around the grounds and look up.
Yes.
And we were just there by ourselves at midday. I was wandering around the grounds and looking up. And after about half an hour, I had this uncanny impression.
Mm-hmm.
That the whole site of Angkor Thom was really the presence of a bodhisattva, an invisible presence, and that when I walked around the towers and my eyes shifted from one bodhisattva face to the other,
yes,
the whole site came alive, and this bodhisattva was looking at me through all these 116 faces at the same time. That was quite a lovely sensation, which I remarked to my friend Lair, which I needn't have done because he was also deep into the same thing. So we mellowed out in that pretty deeply, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I call this lounging in high magnificence, palatial. We climbed on our rickety old bikes and we struck out. We struck out in no particular direction. I don't know if we were intending to go back to Siem Reap or what. And it was easy to do, because the roads in Cambodia are perfectly flat. It's a flat, marshy land, at least in that area. And so bicycling is nothing, you know. Even these old, cranky old bikes that had the chain guard that shuddered a bit, you just had to pedal along slowly, and you were absolutely flat. You could kind of float along.
Mm-hmm.
The roads were tarmac, the road we were on. It was about a lane and a half wide, very eaten up at the edges, but it was an even road. Wasn't buckled by heat or anything. So you could just glide down this road. So we pulled away from Angkor Thom, and after some time, we came into a long stretch of road.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely straight as an arrow, as far down as I could see, which was probably maybe a mile, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And it was in a beautiful, calm time of the mid-afternoon. The air was slightly heavy, languid, as it is in the marshes, but very, very clear, kind of a limpid air. It wasn't too hot. It was October. It's one of those days, one of those moments. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You just could have gone on forever.
Yes.
So we're pedaling along. Lair was about 20 feet behind me. And we come to this place where there's an irrigation ditch on the left side of the road. It was quite a wide ditch. It's about 6 feet or 8 feet wide. And it had some brown water in it, but it wasn't too deep, maybe a couple of feet deep. And there was an embankment about 8 feet long going down to the ditch. Not too steep,
mm-hmm.
not at 45 degrees, but a steep embankment. And I noticed how neatly kept the embankment was, and I followed the line of the river, which followed the line of the road directly ahead of me.
Yeah.
Then at a certain moment, we're just pedaling along, totally in complete comfort, I saw a little village come up. tiny little hamlet. And it consisted of maybe 8 or 10 houses on the right side of the road, which were in two stories and had porches, wooden porches.
Mm-hmm.
The left side of the road, I noticed that there were three kind of inferior houses or shacks.
Yes.
That were jutting out over the water. You know how they build many houses in that part of Southeast Asia up on poles?
Yeah.
So there were those three houses. And we were pedaling along in an October afternoon in Cambodia. And as we started to approach the little hamlet, I noticed a group of children playing in the irrigation ditch to my left. And there were maybe 10 or 15 kids, boys and girls. You could tell the girls by the fact that they had their sarongs wrapped and tied over one shoulder.
Uh-huh.
The boys had their sarongs around their waist. They were your typical Cambodian children. Didn't look unhealthy, looked quite happy, nut-colored, with their round, cheery faces. So I didn't think much of that. I'm pedaling along, get a little closer to this group of children playing in the irrigation ditch. And then, quite in an involuntary way, my eyes went to one of those children. I don't know why. My eyes just went to one of those children. And I was then, I would say, about, that was a long way away.
Yeah.
About 300 yards from them.
Yes.
You know, that's like almost 1,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
They were all splashing around in the water, but my eyes went to one of these children, which was a girl. And then something happened, which I knew was inexplicable at the moment. The moment that my eyes went to that girl,
uh-huh,
who was standing knee-deep in the water, all of the children let up a great exclamation. They all started to shout,
uh-huh,
and jump up and down with great excitement. Well, this all happened very fast, you
mm-hmm
have to reckon.
Mm-hmm.
But something told me that they were behaving that way because my eyes laid on this girl. Well, sure enough, they started to gather around her and sort of make wild gestures. And she very quickly pulled her sarong around herself,
yeah,
and started to clamber up the embankment. Now, between the moment that I set eyes on her and the moment that this cry went up, and the moment that she started to climb up the embankment and she slipped a little in the mud, wasn't a second. In that second, I swear to you, I was up standing on the pedals of this bicycle.
Yes.
Pedaling like a maniac. And I just did it. I just did it. I was standing and pedaling as fast as I could. I saw the girl, I was closing in on this group of children.
Uh-huh.
The other children stayed in the irrigation ditch, but they were still very excited and they were watching the girl clamber out. She got up to the level of the road and I was closing in on her fast.
Yes.
Say, I'm about less than 100 yards away now and I am pedaling like crazy. I tell you, standing up. She runs down the street on the same side of the street. And she runs into one of those ramshackle houses that was up on poles.
Yes.
The moment that she gets through the door, I arrive, fly off my bicycle while it's still going.
Uh-huh.
Bicycle crashes on the ground. The momentum of coming off the bicycle thrusts me toward the house, and I have to stop there, put my hand up against the flimsy wall, to keep from being thrust right inside the house.
Uh-huh.
So I hope this picture of how this happened is clear.
Yes.
Because it was very physical what happened.
Yeah.
And it was involuntary.
Got you.
Got me. Well, these houses don't have any doors, you know. It's like the Chinese style in Thailand and Cambodia. They have an open doorway to the house, and then they have a panel that's parallel to that doorway. The idea is that the panel keeps demons from going in and out, because demons can only make right angles or straight lines. So people have to go into the house diagonally. You get the picture?
Yes, get the picture.
She had ducked into the house diagonally, of course. So I ducked in after her. 2 seconds later, I could see the trail that she left on the floor, the wooden floor, of her feet. And I found myself standing in a small room, maybe 10 by 12 feet, with very rudimentary furniture, some teapots, some lamps, kind of scrolls on the wall, an empty room. And I looked to my right, and I saw another open doorway. There are no doors, you know, open and closing doors in these houses.
Yes.
I saw a doorway to another room, and I stopped, and I listened. And I heard this girl panting, and I knew she was standing in the other room. So I walked around this furniture, because this room was cluttered. I don't know where they sat down, because there were things everywhere. Carefully walked around the furniture, and went over to the doorway of the room where she stood.
Uh-huh.
And I stood in the doorway. Well, there was a Cambodian girl, about 12 years old, free pubescent, I would say. You could see the lines of her body very well, because her sarong was soaking wet, clung to her body. She had it knotted over one shoulder, and she had her hands, one of her hands under the armpit of that shoulder. I think she had her other hand on her tummy. And there was water around her on the ground, on the floor, and there was water dripping from her body and dripping from her ears. She was standing about 6 feet in front of me. I looked at this girl, and my mind then did a very funny thing.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know how I can explain this to you. At that moment, I really didn't have my mind. I didn't know it, but I'd lost my mind. I was in an altered state.
Uh-huh.
But my mind continued to be there, sort of like a dummy, a ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah.
And my mind assumed a very strange tone of voice. You would think that you were talking to God if it didn't sound like a total idiot.
Okay.
So my mind says to me, "What? What? What is that? What is that you're seeing?" My mind is talking to me, really. Is this God or a total idiot, you know?
Uh-huh.
It is very strange, and my mind was drawling. But I had thoughts, and I was sober, I think because I had been at Angkor Thom, and because I had gotten into kind of an elevated state by that sense of being in the presence of the bodhisattvas.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
That it prepared me for this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because I was sober and clear, but my mind was kind of like an answering machine that was running down.
Yeah, an appendage.
Yeah, an appendage. But it was operating.
Uh-huh.
And it was saying, how can it be like that?
Yeah.
How can it be like that?
Uh-huh.
Like what? And saying, well, how can it be so beautiful? And I'm saying, what? What's beautiful? He's saying, well, look at her forehead. How can her forehead be so beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
And even though my mind was doing this very strange, you know, HAL imitation, you know, HAL and...
HAL, that's what I was going to say. HAL 2000.
Yeah, 2001, you know, the computer slowing down.
Sure, sure.
Even though it was doing that, it was giving me very, you know, it was monitoring the situation and it was prompting me very well.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind says to me, well, do you see the light? Do you see the way the light falls on her forehead? Isn't that beautiful?
Oh.
And I said, oh, yeah, that is really beautiful. And so my mind said, well, look. And at that point, the girl who had been panting when she got in got a little tense. And I could tell that she's not afraid. She was looking at me, up at me, with her eyes wide open. She didn't smile. She was passive.
Yes.
The water was dripping off her, but I felt a certain tension in her.
Mm-hmm.
not fear, just a certain tension. The tension came when I decided to give my total attention to her forehead.
Exactly.
Well, I gave my total attention to her forehead. My mind is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying, you see the way the light falls on her forehead?
Yeah.
See how beautiful that is? And I'm saying, yeah, I see. You know? I keep looking. And then my voice, be it God or an idiot, I swear, says to me, but no, John, no. It's not that. It's not the light.
Uh-huh.
The way it falls on her forehead.
Uh-huh.
It's the way it falls from her forehead.
Wow.
And at the moment that I had that thought, and what I'm describing to you here probably took 40 seconds.
Yes.
30, 40 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a torrent, a slow torrent of soft, luminescent, pearly light pouring from the forehead of this 12-year-old Cambodian girl.
Mm.
All over me.
Mm.
And I looked into that light for the first time.
Mm.
I looked into the depth of the organic light by looking at the forehead of this girl.
Wow.
And as I looked into that light, I realized that I was in it, and that I was standing at the end of that torrent in a huge pool or globe of this soft, pearly, cloud-like light.
Uh-huh.
And I went into absolute and total ecstasy. Every cell in my being, everything that I knew and felt at that moment went into complete rapture.
Mm.
And I stood there gazing at the forehead of this girl.
Mm-hmm.
She looked back at me. It's impossible to say how long that lasted, of course, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly, in real time, only lasted a few seconds.
Yeah.
I was completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was emptied of all sense of being, all sense of individuality. And I guess if I were to search for any emotion that I felt, it was gratitude.
Mm.
I never felt so much gratitude in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I probably didn't even know what gratitude was. I was 20 years old and totally lost.
Of course.
Next thing I know is my friend Lair is a very discreet and beautiful human being. He's touching me on the shoulder, on my left shoulder.
Yeah.
Tugging on my shirt and saying, John, come on. You can't be in here. This is a private house, you know.
Mm.
You shouldn't be in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I nodded, and I knew that he was right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave her a look, and a knowing look.
Uh-huh.
And then I turned to my left, and Lair literally led me out of that house like I was a blind man.
Mm-hmm.
He had also glimpsed what I saw, although he didn't stand in the full luminescence of that soft, living current, which I had never felt before in my life, which I had never imagined, and which was given to me from the brow of this child.
Yeah.
So we went out, and then we found ourselves standing in this little hamlet. It was so small, they didn't even have a well in a town, in a center. They just had sort of a dirt patch.
Mm-hmm.
We sat down on the dirt patch. I couldn't speak for 2 hours.
Mm.
Lair, being extremely discreet, did not try to have me speak. We just sat there, and we let the, it was about 5 o'clock then, and we let the life of the little hamlet come alive around us. My bicycle was exactly where I'd left it, at the door to the house. No one went in or out of that house for 2 hours. And all the little boys who had been playing in the irrigation ditch when this whole incident began were playing games and marbles,
mm-hmm.
playing with a little slate board and writing letters and things on it in the town square.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, a couple couple of them would put their heads together, and they would look at me, and they would laugh, and they would point to me. And a couple of them, three of them, in fact, came down, and they sat beside me, right in front of my knees. And they looked up at me, and they crooned their heads back and forth, teasing me and squinting their eyes at me to show me that they knew what I saw.
Extraordinary.
Yeah. And that sort of decompressed me. It took 2 hours. I couldn't say a word. I was gone. I was a total goner. And after that, little activity picked up in the hamlet. I think we bought a Coke or something from them.
Yeah.
Picked up our bicycles and clickety-clacked our way back to our little hotel in Siem Reap.
Well, now I know why all the time that I've known you, which is 21 years, you've carried this picture of these three Cambodian girls with you.
That's right.
That's right.
You know why?
Now I know why.
Mm-hmm.
You had not told me this story, and I know this picture of these three Cambodian girls is one of the treasures that you carry with you everywhere.
I cut it out of a National Geographic.
Yeah.
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 And so I'm very, so glad you're there doing Future Primitive. And I'm so glad I'm here in the kitchen with Belinda.
Yes.
And that we're all alive and well and we can share this story. I just want to say that I know that since I've told this story now,
yes,
I'll be able to talk about the organic light in a more comfortable way. And I look forward to doing that in the right and chosen occasions when you maybe prompt me.
Yes, yes. I want to remind people that this experience was not had under the influence of any entheogen.
That's right. Absolutely none whatsoever.
And I would like to say that I thank you with all my heart and soul for sharing this story with such a gift of intimacy.
Well, thank you, Joanna. You're my touchstone to intimacy, and you always will be. You know that. And so I think on that note, I will say goodbye for now.
Okay.
And we'll talk soon about our next talks.
Beautiful. Thank you.
To my friend.
Thank you, John.